This is the DX Audio Service.
And welcome back to the March 1997 edition of the DX Audio Service. I'm Fred Vobey. Let's answer some questions from our musings to the members. First of all, Paul Burkhart's question about some of those Canadian stations. Well, to answer your question, Paul, Industry Canada has stated that if somebody wishes to apply for a frequency, they're welcome to apply for it. But we've not really seen a mass exodus to some of these vacated frequencies. It'll be interesting to see if stations like CBM in Montreal, when they give up 50,000 watts, how many different stations or how many different facilities are going to jump on that to expand their coverage. And we have seen a few stations actually make a shift from a worse frequency to a better frequency, but for the most part, they've pretty well left them alone. A good question is going to be, what happens if a United States station on the border, say Cleveland, Ohio, were to apply for something like 710, whether or not the Canadian government would give up the claim to one of those Canadian frequencies? I guess only time will tell. TJ the DJ asked about patterns and what some of them look like, and let's just address two of them here, WJJD and AM1000. First of all, on WJJD's frequency, during the nighttime, they transmit kind of on a vector toward Athens, Ohio, Beckley, West Virginia, kind of to the east-southeast, and there's two kind of like knolls in their pattern, just the little dimples into what could be described as a kind of non-directional antenna pattern, but there is definitely a null towards Salt Lake City, which happens to also fall on a vector toward Davenport, Iowa. And then there's also a null toward kind of toward the north, I would say toward Milwaukee, but I'm unsure why they've got that in there, because I don't see any stations to the north side that they would normally have to protect. Obviously, they have to protect Salt Lake City on 1160 and also Davenport, Iowa on 1170. Going over to 1000, there's a good explanation why when I was a kid in Toledo, Ohio, the WCFL would come booming into Toledo about an hour after local sunset. Of course, Chicago is 1 hour behind Toledo time, and that's when they would do their pattern change. During the daytime, they're normally a non-directional station, and at nighttime, if you draw a line between Chicago and Boston, that's about a 27-to-1 ratio. About 27 times more signal goes to the east than it does to the west, and there's just a little bit of a bit of signal kind of going off toward Oakland, California, but not really enough to even speak about. I would say that just judging as a kind of a rule of thumb here, about 50 miles to the west of Chicago, their signal should probably dump out pretty darn quick. And the nulls go toward Seattle and also down toward Oklahoma City. So if you can't get WMVP on 1000 out in the western edges of Illinois, there is a real good reason for that. I've got an offer here which is almost too good to be true, except it will cost you some money if you're interested in going to this. I've got four complimentary exhibit passes to the 1997 National Association of Broadcasters Convention, April 7th through the 10th in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's going to be held at the Las Vegas Convention Center and Sands Expo Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. These are each valued at $150. They are just for the floor where you get to see the equipment and the regular show. It's not for any of the seminars or business meetings. And the only proviso to this is that you must be able to go to the convention. Please do not call and ask for these. If you are just mildly interested or just want them for collection purposes, please just leave these to anybody who can actually go and see the show. I've got four of them. One of them is complimentary of the folks at Newsmaker, and the others are from Pro Video up in Toledo, Ohio. And I'd like to thank them for letting me have these and pass them out. Again, to only those who can go, the first four people who contact me and are able to go to the show and need some passes, here they are. I will give those to you. If you want them, give me a call at 419-228-4199. Phil Wayne is now with us on this edition of the DX Audio Service as he's on vacation, so this is a good opportunity for us to kind of dash through the procedures and policies and state of the club, etc., and get these out of the way for another 12 months or so. First of all, let me touch on the subscription costs. A subscription of the DX Audio Service lasts 1 year for a total of 12 tapes. The cost of the DX Audio Service is $25 per year to those living in the United States, $28 per year to those in Canada and Mexico, and $32 per year to Latin America and Europe. Funds should be made payable in U.S. dollars. Persons in other countries should write for details as the postage rates do differ. Keep in mind that we're not a business, but a member-supported club, so we can't extend credit or take credit card payments. Payments should be made in full at the time that you subscribe or renew in check or money order form payable to the National Radio Club. You should always send the payment to me here at the DX Audio Service since I have the database. I will then take action on your payment as soon as it's received. When you do send in a payment, I'll send you back a postcard with your account details on it. Now, this postcard will contain a check number, sum received, date received, any credits, and your subscription dates. This card is mailed to the person issuing the payment, unless it's a check processing company, in which case I send it to the member as proof that the company did follow through. Be sure to retain this card, as it is your proof of membership. You can pay as far in advance as you want, but I would prefer going the full subscription price. If you have some money problems, I can go 6 months for $13 or 3 months for $7, but I would really prefer working in full yearly accounts. You can pay at any time, so if your subscription ends in September and you want to send in your payment now, that's not a problem. As far as gift subscriptions go, from time to time I run these gift subscription promos. And here's how this works. If you buy a subscription for someone else, another member, I will credit your account for 1 month for each subscription. This does not cover you buying it as a gift for yourself or just telling me that somebody else gave you this gift. You must pay for someone else's subscription and be a member of the DX Audio Service at the same time. If you give a gift to someone who is not a DX Audio Service member, then what I'll do is I'll give you 2 months added to your subscription. However, for renewals, it's just 1 month. Now, I do have to say that we've gotten some pretty interesting gift situations. One person asked that I start a new member subscription and send them a card telling them that they were receiving this gift from a member and letting them know a little bit more about the DX Audio Service. That's not a problem. And I've also had the parents of a member send a radio to me and have it sent with the first issue as a gift to their son. And again, that's not a problem if you'd like to do something like that as a gift, but please allow some time for preparation, especially around the holidays, and take into consideration all the time it takes to get these things shipped about. Let me touch for a moment on the card that I send. On this card, I write the date that I receive the payment. While I don't check the post office box every day, I do check it several times a week. The National Radio Club is not responsible for checks delayed or lost by the post office. If your renewal is late, the options are buy a back issue of the magazine for $3, or we can just simply adjust your subscription date back and send you your missing issues. Question comes up, how do you know when your subscription is about to end? On your last tape, I will scotch tape a little business card to the cassette, and it reads, your subscription to the DX Audio Service is about to end. To renew your subscription, send a check payable to the National Radio Club. Now, when you get this card, it's your last tape. As far as missing and lost tapes go, if you ever do get a tape which is damaged in the mail or is bad for some reason, just send that tape back to me. I have to receive your defective tape back in order to send a replacement. Your tape will be replaced within 48 hours of receipt here in Lima, Ohio. Now, if for some reason you miss a tape, the first thing you should do is check that card that I sent you to make sure that your subscription has not run out. If you're absolutely sure your subscription is good, then here's the procedure. The National Radio Club will only provide one replacement tape per year to members. To get a replacement tape, you must send a copy of a postal complaint form or just send me a card or letter telling me that it's missing. Please wait until the 10th of the month before doing this, as we've had some cases where somebody has panicked about missing a tape, gotten a replacement from us, and then a day later they get the original tape. Please note that you can call me at any time to check your subscription. However, I cannot issue replacement tapes from a phone call. You must send a copy of a postal complaint form or just jot it down on a card or letter and let me know about it. I've got to have something in writing to justify the cost of the tapes and postage to the National Radio Club. If you can't do this, then what you have to do is buy a missing tape as a back issue from the Publication Center. Also, I cannot make copies of issues from tapes that you send me due to the length and the quality of tapes. I'd also like to ask that when you do renew, that you give me a phone number, fax number, or an email address. The only reason I'd like to have this is just in case a tape should be returned to me by the post office as a wrong address or some other problem. Then I can contact you and verify the information. I never use this information for anything other than verification purposes. Be sure that this phone, fax, or email is reliable. And if you change your address, email, or phone information, I'd appreciate that you send this information to me in writing. When you leave it on the answering machine, it's often hard to understand street names and punctuation and such, so please put it in writing. It helps me out a lot. Speaking of back issues, I was asked if we do have the back issues and all of them. Yes, I do. We have every issue from April of 1985 to present, and they are available for $3 from the Publication Center. We also have copies of After Dark number 1 through After Dark number 6. As many of you know, I do cherish my privacy, and because of that, I extend this on to the membership. And while I understand that you may want to get in touch with another member that you hear on the musings or in a column, I will not furnish address or phone information of any member. If you wish to contact a member, just send your request to me in a card or a letter, and then I'll pass it on to that member in question. Then the member can get back in touch with you. Also, just as a point of interest, although companies would like to have our mailing list to solicit products, under no circumstances do I share any information of the DX Audio Service member database with anyone. If a company would like to get their product known to you, then I feel that they can donate a product to the DX Audio Service, which a member can then prepare a report for the rest of the membership of the DX Audio Service. And while we're on the subject of money, as you know, the dues have not changed in over 10 years. And I really don't see a reason to increase the dues this year, as long as our expenses are held to a minimum, hence the reason for the replacement tape issue. As long as we're not replacing large number of tapes or having excessive phone bills, I don't see a real reason to ever raise the subscription costs. As I said back in 1988, as long as the membership dues cover the costs, then that's fine with me. This is not a business or a way to make income for any of us. It may surprise many members that everyone in this organization is a volunteer and does not draw any compensation. In fact, those that you do hear on this magazine often have to pay their own postage costs out of their own pocket. Here in Lima, everything is done by myself. There is no large staff of people working on the magazine, and the only help that I receive is when Connie or John or Debbie help with the pasting of mailing labels and stamps, or someone wants to learn desktop editing workstations from the TV station, and they come over here to edit the muses. The reason I bring this up is because some people feel that the National Radio Club is some kind of business that builds revenue through subscriptions and sales of publication items. This is just a club, folks. Just a club. When you become a member of the DX Audio Service, you become a member of the National Radio Club. And you have the opportunity to voice your vote on the issues in the DX community and participate in the National Radio Club functions, such as the convention held every Labor Day weekend in the United States. You also get a member discount on materials from the Publication Center and can participate in the magazine columns. As I mentioned several months back, non-member comments on the musings line or submissions to columns are not used. If you are involved in a reading group, you can get a subscription for the group. However, tapes may not be copied. If you are a member of a reading service or subcarrier or private line subscription service, There are subscriptions available for broadcast. However, there are some special conditions placed on them. Please do not broadcast or duplicate the DX Audio service without obtaining prior permission. Also, you should know that because the subscription may be in the name of a library or a single individual, I have no way to know if a person in a group is a member or not. So muses from groups are not usually taken. Finally, please note that if you do call me in the office, it may take a few days for me to reply, as I have been very busy with details on digital television, and when not doing the DX Audio service, I have a production and consulting business, and of course the recent health problems have not helped my schedule at all. The best time to reach me is in the evening between 6 and 8:30 p.m. or on weekends. The voicemail will take your message, but I return calls only between 9 and 5 p.m. during the week if I'm home. And I wait until I return to Lima if I pick up messages while on the road. The reason for this is that many hotels tack on a very large surcharge for long distance, so I seldom return calls while I'm on the road. And there you have it, some of the rules and regulations and procedures and policies here at the DX Audio Service. Hey, let's take a quick look at our CPC test report. WCGW 770 in Nicholsville, Kentucky. The address is 3950 Lexington Road in Versailles, Kentucky, 40383-1742. We'll conduct a DX test on Sunday morning, March the 2nd, from 5:15 to 5:45 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, running distinctive tones, polkas, and other music, and Morse code IDs at 1,000 watts non-directional. Reception reports may be sent to Mr. Tom Mulvaney. Prepaid phone calls, please, will also be accepted at area code 606-245-1770 during the test. This test was arranged by Tom Mulvaney for the National Radio Club and IRCA. KFGO 790 at 1020 25th Street, South Fargo, North Dakota, 58103. Will conduct a DX test with 5,000 watts non-directional between 1 a.m. and 1:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Monday. The test will include Morse code IDs. Reception reports may be sent to Mr. Marty Berlinger, Chief Engineer, and this test was arranged by J.D. Steffens for the IRCA CPC. WEST 1400 at 436 Northampton Street, Easton, Pennsylvania, 18042-3516. We'll conduct a DX test from 12 midnight to 12:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Monday, March the 10th, using its 1,000 watts non-directional pattern. This test will include tones, Morse code IDs, and a variety of music, including big band music. Reception reports may be sent to Mr. Robert Kratz, Sr., amateur radio call sign KU3K. He's the chief engineer for radio station WEST. This test was arranged by J.D. Steffens for the IRCA CPC. Now let's look at some historical moments in radio. Here's John Bowker.
Historical Moments in Radio, a collection of stories of the rich and exciting past on the AM radio dial, and today a look at the origins of radio broadcasting back over 75 years ago, back to 1920. Now, in 1971, Gleason Archer authored a book entitled The History of Radio to 1926. It was published by the Arnaud Press and the New York Times. Much of what he wrote stands alone these days as documenting early broadcasting. And today I want to quote from his description of the events just prior to and during that famous first broadcast of the election returns by the Westinghouse Company in Pittsburgh on November 2, 1920. By way of background, the Great World War had ended in 1918, but during the war, the Westinghouse Company had designed and manufactured several radio transmitters capable of carrying the human voice. Among those in the company responsible for this feat was Frank Conrad and his associates L.W. Chubb and O.S. Scherer. Now, after the war, Dr. Conrad had continued his experiments with radio telephone transmissions from his home and had frequently put on programs of recorded music as he was testing his circuits. He had an experimental radio license from the Department of Commerce. His call sign was 8XK. And he was amazed when a local record store offered to let him borrow their new records because they had learned that many people in their neighborhood were tuning in to hear Dr. Conrad's amateur programs, and they thought this might be a way to sell records. Well, the real trigger that started the radio broadcasting industry was an ad that appeared in the Pittsburgh Sun newspaper on the evening of September 29, 1920. Mr. H.P. Davis, a vice president of Westinghouse, saw that ad and early the next day called Conrad and his associates up to the vice president's office to discuss what was going on. You see, that ad simply said that one of the department stores in town had a stock of radio receivers that could be used to receive programs sent out by Dr. Conrad. And Mr. Davis immediately saw the commercial possibilities. Westinghouse would put up a transmitter that might cover the whole city, and they would manufacture radios that could pick up those programs, and a whole radio receiver industry would be born. So Davis asked Conrad and his associates if they thought they could assemble a station and antenna system on the tallest building in the Westinghouse complex out in East Pittsburgh, and if they could do it by the 1st of November. Remember now, this meeting in the vice president's office was held on September 30, 1920. They only had 31 days to accomplish this. Conrad said, yes. Well, bedlam ensued. First, a protected location for the transmitter had to be found close enough to the open roof area of that building so the antenna could be wired directly to the transmitter. They solved that problem by erecting a special structure on the roof of the building. They also needed space for the announcers next to the transmitter, and then they needed some way of getting the latest news up to that announcing position. Somebody had thought quickly enough to apply for a radio license, and on October 27, 1920, the Department of Commerce issued a license with the historic call letters KDKA. Now, over the years, a question has arisen about that license. There are those who claim that Westinghouse never received the license before the famous election returns broadcast, and they had continued to use the older experimental license that Westinghouse had had years earlier for some tests, known as 8ZZ. The recording you may have heard of that historic first broadcast actually is a recreation made nearly 10 years later after the actual event. So we can't offer that as proof either way, but slowly but surely the 100-watt transmitter took shape up on the roof, and the first tests were conducted on Monday, November 1st, 1920. And they were dreadful. The antenna wouldn't tune up right, everybody was getting electric shocks when they touched any of the equipment, and the radio signal faded in less than 2 miles from the plant in East Pittsburgh. Conrad and his associates worked well into the night trying to fix first this and then that. And tests on the morning of November 2nd, 1920 were much better, and during the day even more refinements were made. That evening was the scheduled broadcast, and who do you think was at the controls? Well, it wasn't Frank Conrad. No, no. Dr. Conrad was so nervous that something would go wrong, he stayed at home. But at his home, he had a duplicate transmitter ready to go on the air if anything went wrong over in East Pittsburgh. Nothing did go wrong. The broadcast was a roaring success, and the rest is history. For Historic Moments in Radio, this is John Bowker.
Thanks, John. Now let's take a look at our DX Time Machine from the pages of DX News 50 years ago. From the February 15, 1947 DX News magazine, the FCC issued 52 sets of call letters in a one-week period following the assignment of 13 new calls in the preceding week. Most of these new stations were expected to conduct early morning tests. From the February 8, 1947 DX News magazine, an item in Radio News was quoted reporting that HOX 940 in Panama City opened on October 12, 1946 with 1,000 watts of power. The station was broadcasting in English from 9 p.m. to midnight to combat the English language programs from WVL 790 in Canal Zone. 25 years ago, from the February 19, 1972 DX News magazine, Gordon Nelson discussed the midwinter anomaly in Finland. Also from the February 12, 1972 DX News, an article by longtime DXer Ben Veo told of DXing in the golden 1920s. From 10 years ago, from the February 24th, 1987 DX News magazine, Andy Rugg from Nuns Island, Quebec, noted that propagation conditions were the best he's ever encountered since the winter of 1964 and 65, with audio from some 20 transatlantic stations showing up on 1229. Also from the February 17, 1987 DX News magazine, KGGF 690 was offering $69 for the furthest report of their March 2nd DX test. And that's our DX Time Machine on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Now here's Bruce Conti.
International DX Report. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the International DX Audio Service Report. I'm Bruce Conti. In this edition, the conclusion of the report from Tom Walsh in Nice, France, and in reference to Jim Snowbarger's bandscan report last month, 890 versus 891, as heard in New Hampshire.
Hello, DX Audio Service listeners. This is Tom Walsh of Bedford, Massachusetts. In this tape, I'm going to be providing some recordings taken during a visit to Nice, France, on the southern Mediterranean coast of France, just a few hundred feet from the shoreline of the Mediterranean and just a few miles up the shore from Monte Carlo and the Italian-French border.
Let's listen to 1575. See if we can get an ID here on the half hour.
Temperatura è in diminuzione nei valori massimi, venti deboli o moderati dai quadranti meridionali al nord, mari agitati, i bacini centro-meridionali molto mossi, quelli settentrionali.
Riprendiamo la linea dagli studi di Saxa Rubra a Roma. Abbiamo detto della morte cerebrale di Fabrizio De Chiara, la notizia è arrivata da poco dall'ospedale di Pisa, dove i medici in pratica si sono dovuti arrendere alla gravità delle condizioni del pugile 25enne di Colonio Monzese. Adesso diamo due aggiornamenti per quanto riguarda i posticipi del campionato di basket di Serie A1. Si è conclusa la partita tra Telemarket Roma e Scavolini Pesaro, hanno vinto i romani per 99-92.
It's my belief that that preceding is an Italian transmitter. I'm not exactly sure where, but since I'm currently located only 15 miles or so from the Italian border, it could be fairly close. Next, we're going to try Radio Slovenia and see if they're doing their 2130 English German newscast coming up on 2130.
Radio Slovenia. Na UKW frekvenci prvega programa in srednja vala 918 kHz. Ura je 22:30 minut.
Radio Slovenia on the FM frequencies of the first program and on the AM wavelength 918 kHz. The news.
Radio Slovenia, auf den UKW-Frequenzen des ersten Programms unter der Mittelwelle 918 kHz. Die Nachrichten.
Good evening. Here is the news in English from Radio Slovenia, read to you tonight by Jenny Mazir. Sofia. Slovenia and Bulgaria signed an agreement on free trade between the two countries.
Next, we'll take advantage of our Mediterranean sea location to listen to Longwave on from Algeria in French on 252.
Algérois et Oranais est forte au large de Rennes. En attendant d'éventuels changements climatiques, passez une excellente et très douce soirée à l'écoute des programmes Belgique.
Du 28 novembre consacre le principe du libre choix du peuple.
Fuji time in a bottle. Het is 8:08. Morgen congresseert D66, want er moet een nieuwe voorzitter komen. Tenminste, dat is de bedoeling van het hoofdbestuur, maar zo eenvoudig is dat allemaal niet. Want gaan wij door op de oude voet.
Holland on 747, a station often reported in North America, but coming in quite well here.
Ons verhaal is beter. Onze offerte is scherper. Onze koffie is lekkerder. Ons uitzicht is mooier. Onze receptionisten zijn knapper. En toch slepen zij die opdracht weer voor onze neus weg. Wat hebben zij wat wij niet hebben?
Een kleurenkopieer of printer van Nashuatec. Daardoor zien uw presentaties er veel beter uit. Kies nu voor Nashuatec en u kopieert of print 100 dagen gratis in kleur. Niets is immers te gek van Nashuatec. Bel 060063 voor meer informatie. 060063.
Raadseltje. Wie denkt u dat er eerder rijk wordt van uw koop zo'n polis? U? Of degene die hem aanbiedt? Bel ons voor de goede oplossing. Robeco Advies 060100. Voor een offerte van de Rozeker koopsomrekening.
Radio 1, de nieuws- en sportzender.
Middernacht, zaterdag 23 november, dit is het NOS Radio Nieuws. De bonden en de NS-directie praten sinds enkele uren in Utrecht over hun cao-conflict. De bonden geven nu nadere toelichting op hun jongste voorstellen.
Now, maybe a little treat for all those dedicated NRC'ers who struggle to the seashore, to Rockport and Maine and Virginia just to catch a snippet of a transatlantic station. Now here's a little present for Mark Connolly and Bruce Conti and Al Merriman and all the other dedicated NRCers. 891.
الموعد الجديد إلى هذه الصبيحة المباركة نتمنى أن تقضوا رفقتنا وقت ممتع صبيحة ممتعة من الآن حتى السادسة صباحا. طبعا دائما مع فقراتنا التي عودناكم عليها نتمنى أن تستمتعوا بالفقرات وأيضا بالمنوع.
Okay, Tom, so you received Algeria on 891 loud and clear in Nice, France. So what? Big deal! Actually, let's compare reception. First, let's go back to last month's DX audio service when Jim Snowbarger gave us an example of what he hears out in the Midwest.
The famous 891 from Algeria heard under WLS.
What's spoken of as the January rally, does that tend to be like the first 2 days of January?
You could definitely hear the 1 kilohertz hit under WLS in Jim's report. Now here's what WLS sounds like in New England competing with Algeria. And finally, with some tweaking of the phasing unit on the 30-meter-long east and south slopers. Algeria on 891 is heard in New Hampshire. It sounds muffled because I'm listening with the 2.3 kilohertz IF filter engaged to remove the het. Conditions at the low end of the medium wave band have been quite good over the past month or so. Algeria on 549 kilohertz has actually been a stronger signal than 891, and Morocco on 612 has also been an easy target if you're interested in hearing more from North Africa. Thanks to Tom Walsh for a great report from France. More next time on the International DX Audio Service Report. I'm Bruce Conti, 73s and good DX.
Thanks, Bruce. And on our DX change, Brandon Artman of 515 Maryland Avenue, Westchester, Pennsylvania, 19380-2255, will send you a list of books and magazines that he's cleaning out of his DX shack for a self-addressed stamped envelope. He's also looking for a source of low power, that is, no license required, AM or FM transmitters. Rick Dow at 1901 Union Street, Apartment 220, Lafayette, Indiana, 47904-2685. And his telephone number is 765-449-2734. Would like to trade a Kenwood R1000 and a Radio West Loop antenna for a Sony ICF-2010 and a Palomar Loop, or possibly sell his receiver and loop and buy the Sony and Palomar together or separately. Finally, Ed Best sends information on a AirCheck group, the Indiana Recording Club, which has members around the world. It costs $15 a year to join. Members receive membership directory and every other month a newsletter. People in this group are glad to AirCheck. For an application or for information, write to Bill Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S, at 1729 East 77th Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46240. Now let's swing it over to Ken with a look at the Sports Networks column.
Hello again, members. Ken Anastruck back again, hearing from the Chicago area with your monthly sports report and a little bit more. And to freshen everybody up here this month of February, and coming on the 1997 baseball information, this exhibition season should be starting just a few weeks after you receive your monthly magazine here. And unless I come up with the information or someone else can feed me some information, I'll need some new flagships. The Florida Marlins, their contract expired with WQAM last year, as did the Pittsburgh Pirates on KDKA and the St. Louis Cards on KMOX, and the Baltimore Orioles on WBAL, and the New York Yankees on WABC, and the Cleveland Indians on WKNR, and the California Angels on KMPC. So we'll probably check up in the next few weeks and see what fresh information we can dig up on that, on these new contracts. Okay, other than that, borrowing a little bit of time from John Bowker and his radio history profiles, as he does, NRC member Ray Nemec of Naperville, Illinois, sent me a copy of WJJD's broadcast profile, and I'd like to share a small part of it with you. Authority to operate a new broadcast station with the call letters WJJD was granted by the Bureau of Navigation Radio Division, U.S. Department of Commerce, on October 11, 1924, to the Supreme Lodge Loyal Order of Moose at Moosehart, Illinois. WJJD was named for U.S. Secretary of Labor James J. Davis, who was also Director General of the Loyal Order of Moose and founder of Moosehart, an estate of 1,200 acres some 35 miles west of Chicago, Illinois, a home for children of deceased lodge members. WJJD went on the air Monday, October 13, 1924, on 278 meters, about 1080 kilohertz, using 500-watt Western Electric transmitter. Its operating room and adjoining studios were located at a two-story structure on the grounds of Moosehart, with two steel towers nearby which supported the station's flat-top T-type antenna. Moosehart was a non-profit enterprise, and WJJD originally operated in the same spirit as a service to the millions of moose in the United States capable of receiving WJJD's mere 500-watt signal. And updating things a bit, on Sunday, June 17th of 56, WJJD inaugurated a top 40 popular music and news format, patterned after a successful format at WMPS in Memphis, Tennessee. The station was an early user of tape cartridge equipment around 59 and 60. Up until this time, union musicians operated station turntables, and the cartridge music tapes were to end that practice. Effective February 10th of 60, WJJD dropped the top music format, and by mid-1964, the station operated daily from 4 a.m. to local sunset at KSL Salt Lake City for popular music. In 1965, in February, they debuted a country music format, and the FCC allowed them a CP to change its transmitter location and reduce tower height on March 8 to 65. They moved to 2355 Ballard Road in Des Plaines. And the licensee name continued to be Plow Broadcasting. They were then affiliated with ABC Information Network in April of 74. In early 82, JJD, formerly a country music outlet, switched to Elham Syndicated Music of Your Life. Remember that one? The nostalgia big band format. Then the big band station was sold by Plow Incorporated on July 23rd of 84. And retiring Shearing, Plow Incorporated chairman Abe Plow died at the age of 92, September 14th of 84. The Tupelo, Mississippi-born druggist founded Plow Incorporated in 1906. In 1984, JJD's 10-year affiliation with ABC ended when it switched to an affiliation with the RKO2 radio networks. That network changed its name to United Stations 2 Network on April 19th. That should be of 84. The FCC authorized JJD to add nighttime 10,000-watt service on October 26th of 84 with a change of two-pattern day and night directional operation. The station started that service in late 84 with a new nighttime directional pattern using 10,000 watts. A Hits of the 50s music format from Satellite Music Network was started in 1985. The USA2 network then became known as the Unistars Network in September of 89. Then on September 20th, the FCC authorized WJJD to reduce their nighttime power from 10 to 5,000 watts, still two separate patterns. And that started in late 89. In 1993, JJD added talk segments to its Hits of the 50s music format and continued to be a Unistar Network's affiliate. They dropped the music program entirely in November 94 when it switched to a hot talk format, which you probably have heard throughout the country. Local local shows were heard during the morning hours, while syndicated talk shows from Westwood One, formerly a Unistar, were aired during the balance of the day. A merger was announced in 1996 between licensee parent Infinity Broadcasting and Westinghouse-owned CBS Broadcast Group, and that merger was approved by the FCC late December of 1996. Today, WJJD, the 14th oldest continuously licensed AM broadcast station on 1160, 50,000 daytime, 5,000 nighttime, from offices and studios at 180 North Michigan Avenue, Suite 1200, Chicago, Illinois. Now I'd like to share with you a little bit of what I can hear on there now from my local listener. You enjoyed that little bit of taping that I did recently, and I'll see you in March with some new baseball information, and good DX, friends. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much, Ken. And finally, we have an interesting note which was sent to us by Rick Wicks, who's a research associate at Gothenburg University Economics Department in Sweden, and he writes, "A disaster has struck VOA Europe, Voice of America's popular FM programming station, which has been available through Europe as much of the rest of the world, too. It has changed the name on the first of the year to VOA Express because it was truly becoming a global radio network. But then when privatization negotiations apparently broke down, largely due to bureaucratic inefficiencies in the U.S. government, I'm told, perhaps some organizational jealousies and infighting as well, it was suddenly and cruelly cut off the air without any warning. The official story coming out of the VOA upper echelons is that it simply changed broadcasting mode and that the VOA Express continues, but the truth is that virtually all the old VOA Europe staff was fired, and the programming was totally changed from music and more with live disc jockeys to 1950s-style talk programs with dull announcers. At the same time, they switched from analog satellite delivery to digital delivery, which they're touting as quote, a improvement. But the fact is that most affiliate stations which have been broadcasting the signal don't have the equipment required to receive the new signal. And they don't think that they're going to be able to get that equipment. Millions of listeners worldwide have been left out in the dark. There was no announcement until just hours before the cutoff on January 25th, and VOA's webpage announcements don't discuss what really is happening at all. But there is an email and fax campaign to save VOA Europe in its old program format, with a website at http://www.worldonline.nl/tilde-medcom. If you want to email your concerns or questions about this situation, please do so. Please contact me. My name is Rick Wicks, W-I-C-K-S, and my email address is rick@economics, economics.gu.se. And I have to say that after reading that from Rick, I just have to think back to our discussion with John Vodnik of the closing of the Voice America facility in Mason, Ohio, and how much what he said several years ago has come true. So one has to wonder what is happening at the VOA and what kind of problems they are having internally at that agency. With that, I'm going to close down this edition of the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Be sure to get out there and support radio. And hopefully we'll be a little bit healthier on the next edition of the DX Audio Service. 73 and good DX.